TNKR Media.
Welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs, our 15th season, showcasing stories from outstanding business people presented by BDO Canada. My name is Dan Delmar, and Mike Newton is off this week. Let's welcome back in Ernie Furt, tax partner at BDO Canada. Welcome back, Ernie.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
How are you today?
I am well. It's in the middle of tax season. We're pumping away, and that's what we have to do at this time of the year.
Excellent. We're going to talk about the sharing economy today. So our guest is Fauve Doucet, President and CEO of Partage Club. It's an app that lets people partage things, share things in their same neighborhood. And they have services where people can create these sharing clubs within their own organizations or workplaces or municipalities. And it lets people avoid buying stuff and sharing them with their neighbors instead. It's a really neat idea.
Yeah, I think it's great because I've seen situations where you need this massive carafe of coffee that's like a 40-cup coffee machine, and you use it once every 2 years. So if you have that and you can share that with friends, that's a cool thing.
Right, and you can get that 40-cup carafe, you know, maybe on Amazon for $40, $50, and so a lot of people will go ahead and buy that. But do you really need to? And is that the best thing for the environment, or would it be better to just share one instead, exchange them. And so you pay a monthly fee, you get access to a Partage Club, and you can share just about anything. And they go pretty high up in terms of stuff you can share, up to vehicles even. So we'll get into that with Fauve as well. But first, let's tackle some current events, news, and notes. And we want to talk about being a better boss, Ernie. So 7 powerful ways to be a better boss and boost your bottom line. This piece is from Inc.com, which I think has some pretty interesting tips. And the first one, which is one of the early issues we talked about on the show, is being okay with failure and knowing how to bounce back from it.
You got to make it safe to fail, you know, because not everything is going to be successful. And 57% of people quit because of a bad boss, not a bad organization, but a bad boss. So that's important. You have to be transparent and you have to communicate openly with your employees. Need to be an active listener is another one. You know, be an active listener. Don't sit there on your cell phone looking at the sports scores while somebody's talking to you. It's just not the right way to go. Give the people the full attention that they need. You know, focus on people's strengths and not on their weaknesses.
Embracing a growth mindset is another on the list. And one really great tip for leaders is making time to work on yourself as well.
Listen, if you're expecting people to work on themselves, you have to work on yours. It's very simple.
And I want to pick up on that note from this piece on entrepreneur.com, how learning to take care of myself helps me take care of my business. For entrepreneurs, the writer says, particularly women, balancing the myriad responsibilities of business ownership can be all-consuming. So what is your advice? Do you have a self-care routine, Ernie?
I didn't, but I'm starting it again. And you know what? At the end of the day, you know, the pandemic produced a lot of interesting things for people. For me, it was not a great time. I had a nice weight gain and it's time to lose it again. And when I grabbed hold of myself in order to do this, I felt more positive about myself. And if I feel more positive about myself, it's easier to feel positive in the workplace and demonstrate that positivity as opposed to demonstrating a negativity, you know, which will lead, you know, to a lack of creativity, and you're going to be tired all the time. You're going to be anxious. These are not good things. You know, anxiety and stress are a different thing. You know, anxiety is a constant. Stress is something I had before the show because I had to read all the articles and make sure that I knew what I'm doing, okay, at the end of the day. So that's a stress, but that stress is alleviated very quickly after you deal with it. The anxiety remains. So if you find yourself anxious, time to make a change.
Are you anxious right now?
No, I'm not anxious at all right now. I'm a little stressed, but I'm okay.
Okay, it's just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
It's March in the accounting world. Oh, good. It's fine.
Yes, of course.
And I would say as well, during the pandemic, my health declined a little bit and I'm starting to rebound now and I'm starting to work in stuff into my daily routine a little bit more, not just talking about meditation, but actually meditating in the day if you have too many stressors, making sure you get a good lunch period in, going for a little walk at some point during the day, in my case, maybe walking a dog. So I hope leaders are building in a little bit more self-care and making it routine. Well, one term that I found helpful, Ernie, is from a book called Atomic Habits by a neuroscientist. And the term I seized on is called habit stacking. And so if you have a series of habits, part of your morning routine or your lunch routine or evening routine, and you stick to that stack of habits or chores and intersperse them with things like meditation or getting a quick stretch or workout in, you'll see your lifestyle and your leadership abilities benefit as a result.
And learn a new hobby. Do something different. If you like woodworking, do some woodworking. You want to you like cooking? Take a cooking class. Take a wine appreciation class. Because at the end of the day, it's that varied day that'll help you pass through all the days and allow you to, you know, to be good with yourself. Because the self-care is truly a journey. And it's not something that you're doing in 2 minutes.
And a lot of entrepreneurs, especially startup owners, will say to that, Ernie, well, I just don't have time. You know, I'm working 12, 15-hour days. I don't have time for all that. And it's important to understand the neuroscience of that because your brain actually needs rest to be optimal. So if you're working too long and you're not getting a little meditation or exercise in and you're not feeding yourself properly, it's impossible for you to work anywhere near 100% during those 12, 15 hours a day.
100%. You have to take care of yourself first and take care of others and make sure everything gets done in the workplace at the end of the day.
Yeah, systems maintenance, just like your hardware.
Exactly. Everybody needs an oil change, you know?
This one from Inc.com, meet like a billionaire, 5 tactics to slash meeting times by 50%. I love this. This meetings can really be unproductive sometimes. Well, what's your biggest meeting pet peeve, time waster, Ernie?
People chatting, having that 5-minute period at the beginning of a meeting, if not longer, where people don't realize you're having a meeting on Teams or on Zoom and that there's 12 other people in this meeting and everybody's talking about their personal whatever at the in that meeting, which is distracting from the main purpose. You know, you want to be able to do these meetings quickly. You want to be able to do these meetings efficiently and not be there herding cats at the end of the day.
Fair enough. Here's some advice, in terms of slashing meeting time from Inc.com. Eject topics that do not require regular review. So if you don't have to review something, you have to make it part of the process every time necessarily. Another is hand out hall passes. In other words, attendance can be not required sometimes. If you don't need to be there, you can always catch up later. And there are a lot of tools, by the way. We've been using Otter AI for quite some time, and you can get your transcript of the meeting and browse it later. If you're sick or can't go for whatever reason, you can catch up on the meeting later on. Even the AI will generate summaries for you of the meetings you can't attend. Leverage one-on-ones. Check in, one-on-one with people as much as possible because that results in better productivity. And adopt the 10-minute rule or 15-minute rule, 20-minute rule, whatever you prefer for your company. That is to say, setting a hard cap on the length of that meeting.
Yeah, it's always important to have an end time in mind. Meet up with people. You don't necessarily have to have these meetings with the entire team every week. You can meet with people individually. It may prove more fruitful at the end of the day because certain things require discussions individually. Other things require discussions in a group format, but try limit your time.
Yep. And I mentioned Otter AI for meeting summaries. There are functions within other programs like Zoom that'll provide the same thing. So that can catch you up there. And last but not least, one piece of advice that I've found the most practical is make sure there's a takeaway or an actionable that comes out of the meeting, not just, oh, thanks for chatting, guys. You know, what are we going to do to follow up on this action or take things to the next level?
Exactly.
So sticking with the meeting theme, I love this article also from Inc.com. Scientists pinpoint the exact moment people lose interest in a presentation. How long do you think it takes, Ernie, roughly?
Roughly, I would say 10 minutes roughly.
Yeah.
Because, so, you know, 10 minutes, I don't know, people have the attention spans of birds today, and 10 minutes is all they can take on one topic. So what are you going to do? You're going to have that, you're going to have your little meeting. You're going to, how are you going to refocus people's attention? People need breaks in order for them to be able to re-engage. They don't need a physical break. They need something different. So if you show a video or two on topic after that 10-minute span, all of a sudden they're going to be re-energized. And then maybe you'll mix it up and throw somebody else into the presentation, and they'll do a 10-minute span.
We're not just estimating, by the way. This is science. A Finnish study, according to, again, Inc.com, says that it's around 9 minutes, 59 seconds, according to the researchers. It's just around exactly the 10-minute mark when people start to, as the report says, feel drowsy, and some even fall asleep nearly, according to what scientists were observing. So the takeaway, according to them, as you mentioned, take the breaks, you know, have a stimulating content in there to break up the meeting. And they write that keeping people glued to your presentation is hard, especially with so many distractions competing for your viewers' attention. So if you do have to go over the 10 minutes, well, make sure you break it up. And for lack of a better word, I guess, Ernie, entertain your audience.
Listen, entertainment is part of everything. That's what I try to do when I'm making a presentation. If I'm doing a tax presentation, for example, I will break it up with observations, with humor, with questions. Because if you engage your audience, then the audience feels part of it. And it's not that they're being just spoken to, they're part of the discussion. And I think that's an important way to go. And ask the questions, make sure people are commenting, and when they're commenting, great. If not, you know, you have to gauge your audience beforehand. Sometimes that's very difficult to do, but you do the best you can at the end of the day.
Ernie Fert, let's get going with the show and talk to our entrepreneur, Fauve Doucet of Partage Club. They make an app that allows people in the same town or organization to share all kinds of items, thereby reducing consumption and saving a ton of money.
That's an amazing thing if you can do it.
Fauve Doucet is with us. Fauve, welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs.
Hi, nice to meet you.
So likewise. And first question is the easiest. What is Partage Club?
So we are an application that you can download on your phone that allow you to basically borrow and share items of your day-to-day life with your community in an unlimited, safe, and positive way. There's no exchange of money between people. There's only an annual fee of $60 to get access. So it's basically we're promoting borrowing instead of buying for the environmental aspect of it, for the economical aspect, because we know life costs more and more these days. And also the social aspect. So creating connection with your neighbors.
What are some of the things that people like to borrow?
Oh my God, you have no idea of how various the catalog can be. But what we see that is the most popular, there's four categories that are really coming in. It's anything related to the kitchen. So waffle maker or like a portable barbecue, like this is the first category. The second one is anything related to tooling, like a drill. Anything related to sporting goods. So let's say ice skates or even just ski and things related to childhood. So like if you think about just a stroller that you're going to need probably for a year, but some people like keep it between two kids. So what we see is that people are sharing also goods related to kids and childhood.
Tell me about your background and where this idea came from.
So I've been head of like big agency in terms of department. I was always working in the marketing industry, but at some point, like I was also a mom of two kids and I felt it was completely outrageous. The number of toys that was just coming in my house, I had no space. It was costing a lot, but at the same time, I had no space to buy just like a bike to my kid. So I was kind of like living this tension of not wanting to overconsume, but at the same time wanted to give the world to my kids. So this is where I started thinking about collaborative economy, the sharing economy, getting more and more aware of how it was working. And at some point, I've just started to like do a study. I have done also a prototype, which we call in the tech industry an MVP. And after I've done the crowdfunding and it's been successful and I've been putting a bricks after another brick, got the courage to leave my big job to start that project that was really related to my values.
Because I see you have a marketing background. So we go from marketing to tech. How do we get from marketing to tech?
We get surrounded by the right person. I think that honestly, what I found in marketing, because two times in my career, I was like in conflict with the marketing industry related to my values, because they are also responsible of creating needs that are unnecessary, which is not good for our wallet and also for the environment. But at the same time, what makes me proud of being from that background is that I have a superpower. I have the superpower of changing behavior at scale by communicating, which is a really good power to have.
But it's an amazing power to have.
It's an amazing power, but I wanted to use it for goods. So I wanted to use it for people to act in the right way. So that was, I think it's really powerful to have someone also coming from the marketing and communication industry, coming in the tech background. And from the tech side, really quickly I knock on doors of people that have been building tech companies, startups. I've been reading books about the lean methodology. I've hired one of the best developers in town, and I've learned.
So let's talk about the tech a bit more, because it does require a lot of work when you have such a large database of clients. They're sharing stuff with each other, communicating with each other, database of items, geolocation. What are your server costs like? I'm wondering as well. How was that entire setup process just to get the physical infrastructure needed to run the app?
Yeah. So the first thing is that there's a lot of provider. They're smart. They are giving like the first year in credits or the first data in credits because they want to have a foot in the door. So usually you can have like a year or 2 years, depending on the data and the program they offer, to just get things running. So you have the time to find your business model, get some money kicking in to have that set up. The second aspect is that the way we've financed our project was through a crowdfunding campaign. And this is not for every business. We have a business that is like more mass B2C that touches a lot of people. So this is where we got our first $85,000. And we promised people that before the end of the year, we would give them the app, like the app would be ready. But when we released the app, it was like crashing all the time. But we've communicated that to people. We've said like, it's a beta version. You're going to give us feedback. We're going to co-create the app together. So people have been also like more patient to it. So this is how we've been building it. But it doesn't cost, like you can think for an app like ours, it can cost between $1 to $2K per month to run it from a server's standpoint. And after, it depends on your technology, because when you build a technology, I don't want to get too technical, but you always have two choices. Either you build it from scratch, so it takes more manpower and time, but it costs less in the long run because you've been building it, or you basically buy other pieces of the puzzle from other tech company, but after it's a recurring fee per month. So you need to check what's the most sustainable, depending on where you're going.
That's quite interesting. I noticed with the subscription base, you have a $60 annual fee, but you also offer a 90-day trial period. Okay, now the 90-day trial period, what made you decide to do it that way?
So the first value we have is trust, because people are sharing items together and they need to trust each other, because there's no exchange of money, there's no deposit. It's really they do it and we create connection with people. So trust is our number one value. And this is why also we don't say we're $59.99 per year. We're $60. It's like, this is the price. There's no influence. There's no manipulation. That's the price. And for us, giving 3 months free trial is like, give it a shot. Try it. See the magic. See that when you post a need in 24 hours, you're going to have 5 people responding to you. See how people are generous. See how you can save money. And after like trying it is adopting it. So for us, it was just making sure that, because we're doing behavior change, people love buying. So they need to try and understand what's the value. It's really innovative what we're offering. So for us, that was kind of like a no-brainer to give a chance to people to try it before.
A little bit of an alternative from Facebook Marketplace or something like that, where people go and look for used tools or used whatever. And here, they're not actually buying them. They're actually borrowing them. So it's quite a novel concept. It's the old help neighbors helping neighbors at the end of the day. And but, you know, you run into one problem. I've run into this actually with my daughter who didn't return something for a year. What happens there?
Have she done it on Partage Club or has she done
no,
it?
No. She didn't return it to me.
That's the thing. With our app, we have like a sharing system. So when you ask for something, a book or anything, you need to ask for dates. And the borrower, the lender, needs to also accept the dates. So there's kind of a little contract. And you can see when it should come back. And people get alerts. Because in our research, we found that people are kind of shy to ask the borrower to bring back their own object. This is like an anthropologic kind of like, this is what we found. So because it's in the app and the app kind of keeps remind you that you're late, people respect those dates. And if they don't respect, they can also get banned from the app. So this is the way that we're kind of like the bodyguard of the sharing, the sharing lifestyle. And we're also looking to also invest in insurance. So that's coming in. So that could be like this news that we're talking in, because we're getting more and more asked to also do car sharing. Because once you start like sharing your drill, the Monopoly game, why not your car when you've built the trust? So definitely insurance is going to be key for that.
We're going to dig in a bit more to where your venture is going, and we'll talk about maybe insurance and some other spaces that you'll go in into the future. But just real quick before you head to break, on the basics, in terms of revenue generation right now, is it all subscriptions?
It's all subscription, but the majority of our revenues coming from the corporate sectors, which was kind of not seen at the beginning. So we've been talking about you, me, like we could get our subscription of $60. But now we're getting also cities that are buying licenses for their citizens. We have 6 cities. We have educational institutions like kindergarten, universities, college that are buying basically licenses. So employees and students can create their own club and share together. We have companies that are doing this for their employees. So they have their private club and their neighborhood club. Same thing, to build connection within in the corporate sector. And it's also like a sustainable action in their development plan. And we have also real estate promoters that have residents and they have not that many rooms. So they're also giving those subscription. And this is 80% of our revenues.
I love the clubs within the clubs, especially I'm wondering, I'm sure you're in some rural municipalities, perhaps, where this is really useful as well.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Fove, I really like the line. I do a lot of marketing and copywriting. It's what I do mostly. And so I love a good headline. And when you take on Amazon in on your website, I think that's really, really cool. And the line is, it's faster than Amazon Prime. I love that as a marketing line, faster and of course, much cheaper as well and better for the environment. Who came up with that line? That looks like it might be a customer that did.
It's actually like we got three members. We don't call it customers. We call it members because they're not buying. I came up with those lines.
Yeah, I love it. And when you look at Amazon, I mean, are you looking at them as a competitor in a sense?
Yes, actually, yes. You know what? Because when we look at just only in Canada, the practice of buying, what we see in terms of the secondhand, 50% are coming from buying, 30% from giving, only 10% is renting and borrowing. So people in their day-to-day life don't borrow. So we don't have that many competitors. So we think that where we're going to get market share, if we think in terms of transaction, it's going to be from people buying new, coming from Amazon, Costco, Toys R Us, like name it, and also secondhand. So people that are going to marketplace and they're opening their phone to buy something. What we want people to do is like, when I need something, I don't buy it new. I don't buy it secondhand. I can borrow it. That should be the first thing you think about because you save money and it's good for the environment.
On that theme, you want to encourage people borrowing. So are you going to try to get a high placement on like almost like a Facebook marketplace so people can actually see you pop up and say, hey, maybe there's an alternative here?
That's a really good point. We've been thinking about that, how we can get outside of the app, because people like download the app, love the concept, love the lifestyle, but sometimes they just forget. And after they just, because we get bombarded by advertisement and it's everywhere, people have the reflex to buy, to be able to enjoy something. So that's a really good point, being on the, we call it the, I like to call it like the place, not of the crime, but like where you're going to buy something to get really this momentum of like, should I really need to buy this thing that I'm going to use maybe one time or not even one time, like one time per 2 years? Should I really need to buy it? So that's a really good point. That's a good idea.
I thought it's interesting because at the end of the day, I use rent-a-tool places when I need something big and fancy. I'm not necessarily going to go buy it. You know, I will have people have their basic products, their basic drills, their basic hammers, but there's certain things that they won't, you know, go out and buy. If you want to make a dryer hole in a cement thing, they're not going to have that. So you're going to go to a rent-a-tool place to get that. And rent-a-tool places would be a, you know, competition for part of what you do, not obviously the real estate area, but if somebody is trying to do home renovations by themselves, this is a very good area.
I would say to that, true, people rent, but I would say again, borrowing and renting, they've mixed it in the study together, it's 10% of what people, how they get access to things. So we're not doing that really often, maybe once a year. It's really not a practice that it's democratized. And second thing is that what we see is that the price between renting and buying is not enough big for the trouble that it is to like reserve the tool, go to the place, make sure you bring it back, doing the deposit, all of this. Sometimes it's like maybe $50. So people are saying, okay, I won't bother. I will just buy it that time. Maybe for a specific object or tool that you said that no one has it for sure, but it's really not our day-to-day life. Like if you think about waffle maker, a camping tent, a golf club, like a bag of to just play golf one time a year. Let's say for my kids, the number of toys that I borrow, it's crazy. Even like at their birthday, now my kids, because they've been living with Partage Club, they're asking for activities because they know they can have all the toys they want whenever they want, right? So it's a new way of thinking.
In terms of small items, I mean, certainly super practical for young families, but how big are you going to get with some of the items? I mean, are we going into cars or even homes where there are apps that, of course, are very specific to those larger ticket items? Is that on your radar?
We got the RV, Westfalia's motos that have been borrowed without insurance because we don't have the insurance yet. We're going to have it. We're working on this. So people, when they have like this trust aspect, they're really keen to share more than we expect. Actually, I'm going to tell you something that is super counterintuitive, and we found it in our first prototype, is that we're basically building a marketplace. So there's demand and offer. So people that are borrowing and people that are lending, okay? And when you build a marketplace, even if it's for selling, sharing, okay, you always have one side that is harder to stimulate. And you need to find it quick because this is where you're going to put your energy and the functionality of your product and your marketing to make sure like it gets balanced. So my question to you, and it's always my interactive question, what do you think is the hardest or that we need to stimulate? Is it that people feel comfortable sharing or people that feel comfortable asking?
Wow, it's
the second
question.
It's the second one, because people are not comfortable asking. People may be comfortable sharing, but you have no idea unless you ask.
I mean, it's so hard to choose one, because on the one hand, society is pulling us kind of further apart, right? And so we're shy, we're becoming increasingly isolated, somewhat antisocial. And on the other hand, there's more of a convenience to buy stuff very instantly with Amazon Prime and all that. So you're working against two very difficult forces that in some ways, the algorithm kind of controls both forces, right?
So I would say that it's really clear when you try doing it with people and it's asking. So you were right. It's really asking. So when people say, I need, you can have 10 people answering in 24 hours. People love sharing. So when you know that you need to stimulate people asking versus sharing. So basically, and it creates trust between people. So once you start doing it, and it needs only one time that you share and you trust the person, you met the person physically, you get a chat a bit because you want to make sure the object comes back. This is where actually you can after share bigger items.
And a little overtime now with Fauve Doucette from Partage Club. So Fauve, I know we want to get a little bit into insurance, Ernie, because that's very interesting. How do you prevent people from abusing the system, especially when you have so many people sort of sharing their own personal belongings? What are your thoughts on the insurance angle, Ernie?
Well, I think the insurance is very important, especially all of a sudden you're borrowing some type of tool or a baby carriage and it breaks. So what happens when it breaks? You know, do the people have to, if there's no insurance, then the people have to deal with it together. That could be stressful. So the question is, if the insurance is brought in, then that can alleviate that stress. Fauve?
So currently, what we've seen in our study is that insurance would be important, but it was not the one piece to validate when we're building the business. Like people would still share if there's no insurance. There's other way to trust people than insurance. So this is why we haven't tackled this first. We've put this to later because people, there's other ways like you can have feedback review from people, creating clubs because people are living close from each other's. So that builds trust. So what we've done is we have a code of honor when you subscribe and the borrower needs to bring back the object the way it was. Because sometimes it breaks because things break when they get used. So we do education on that. It's not because you have been like mean or whatever. It's really just because you've been using the object. So you need to repair or you need to buy the object to replace it. And it happens, I think, 5 times out of like thousand and thousand of sharing actions. So people are really like careful the way they do things. But we know that insurance just going to help us take off this little friction point of like, what if something happens? Like, I don't want to feel like uncomfortable bringing back the object the way it wasn't, right? Like in a bad situation. So we're working on insurance right now.
And it could also add to your revenue stream.
Yeah,
which is good point. Quite interesting.
And again, I want to go back to the clubs within the clubs. Do you have a lot of, you said you had some schools, perhaps some healthcare institutions, you know, people go to workplaces and they're very large and don't know their coworkers and they can, you know, essentially do transactions very quickly like that. Can you give me maybe an example of how you work with a large institution and why one that might be listening might want to get involved with Partage Club?
Yeah. So right now we have 4 different segments outside of like the people that are just buying their subscription of $60 a year. So we have cities that are buying licenses for their citizens. We have companies that are building this as an advantage for their employees. So they create their clubs. It creates retention and collaboration. It helps their employees save money. And it's good also for their sustainability and responsible plan for the year. We have also educational institution like universities, kindergarten, college that offering this for their employees and students to share together. And we also have real estate promoters that are giving the licenses for their residents because usually they don't have that much room also to store items.
Just to confirm, you're only in Quebec, is that correct?
Yeah, we're starting getting some members that are a bit on their island, on other provinces or countries, but in Q2 we're looking to expand in east coast of the United States and BC.
Make sure your insurance stuff is in place when you go to the States.
Why?
Because they're very litigious down there, so they're going to blame everybody for something that breaks. So that's something to be careful on.
Please see Ernie Fauve when you do go down to the States. Fauve Doucette, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And we're going to have your one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs in just a few moments.
Sounds good.
But first, let's check in with our BDO specialist. Juliana Papandrea is Senior Manager, Business Services Outsourcing at BDO Canada. Welcome back to the show, Juliana.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
And Ernie, talking about outsourcing, a lot of companies, especially startups, could certainly benefit from outsourcing parts of their operations, even in tech.
Outsourcing is very important, but people have to understand first of all, before we get into the questions, what outsourcing is. So, Juliana, just take a minute and explain what outsourcing is.
Okay, so business outsourcing is when you hire someone outside of your business to take care of certain aspects of the business. In this case, we're talking about accounting needs for a business. So rather than have an internal accounting department for a small and medium-sized company, it would make more sense to hire someone, an outside specialist, to take care of that.
So that's why the business would choose to outsource their accounting needs.
Usually they would choose it because it could be a startup, small, medium-sized business, and it would be easier and less expensive for them to, you know, outsource it. So to hire an outside specialist for that.
Yeah, because when you have an inside specialist, you're paying big money and you may not need them full time. While in a small environment, you know, you'll have the access to that specialist outside and you will hire them only for a short period of time so you can do what you need to do and be more task oriented.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. So the company can, you know, benefit from huge savings because you don't have to have these expert professionals on your payroll full time. You can have them just when you need them, just to perform certain tasks and, you know, when you need them. And like I was saying in the last time I was on the show, we were talking about leadership, teamwork, and employee support. And what's the best way to support your employees? It's surrounding them with experts and specialists when you need them. And so this is something that we feel is very important. It's a key It's key for businesses.
Are there any other benefits that a smaller, medium-sized business would get from outsourcing?
Oh, definitely. There's so many. I mean, besides cost savings, efficiency, there are so many. I mean, we could look at, external accounts. I mean, we're using the latest software. You know, there's data security. There's, information's getting backed up. So company doesn't have to worry about this, doesn't have to have IT worry about it. And there's also, you know, less risks to bear for the company because they have the experts bearing the risk. So there's time savings. There's so many benefits. We really see the benefit, especially because it's allowing business owners to focus on what they're good at, to focus on their day-to-day operations, not have to worry about their accounting and payroll issues.
So how can the outsourcing help that company achieve their goals?
Well, like I mentioned before, the experts can help management in their decision-making process. They could help plan for financial growth and expansion. Specialists are always up to date with compliance measures, and they usually have extensive market knowledge and a pool of resources in various fields to help the company succeed. When you have experts taking care of the books, the result is cleaner and you have more accurate financial reporting at the year end as well.
It's basically a concept of leverage, what you have here with outsourcing. So you're leveraging your expertise. You focus, as you said, on what you're good at, and allow the other experts to focus on what they're good at, so you can produce a great product, both internally and externally, for any company in a smaller, medium-sized range. And that's an amazing thing for clients if they can get the stuff that they need done, but they just don't have the expertise in-house. They can get it outside, and they should be turning to you for this kind of stuff. This is great.
That's exactly it. And we see how difficult it is to hire, experts in-house. So this is the perfect solution for everyone.
That's great. We really appreciate your time coming on the show and telling us about all the outsourcing. And I'm sure there's many people have many questions on this kind of stuff, and they can contact you in order to get this done.
Absolutely, Ernie. Thanks for having me.
Juliana, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Senior Manager of Business Services Outsourcing at BDO Canada. And don't forget, you can always head to bdo.ca for the latest in thought leadership on outsourcing and many other issues. Expert advice from the entire team, bdo.ca. And as we come to the end of our show, let's ask our entrepreneur, Fauve Doucet, president and CEO of Partage Club, for her one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs. Fauve, what do you think?
I have so many advices, but one that keeps to my mind, and I think that's been our strength, is get surrounded by people that don't have your expertise. So be humble, put your ego aside. And once you like don't know something or you need to like just learn quicker, make sure that you build like an advisory committee. If you're just starting, you don't need to build like a board yet. Need to like just knock on doors, ask for advice and ask how they've done it. Me, it was tech. I didn't know tech. So I found people that know tech because I'm coming from the marketing advertising background. But I also found people coming from my own background to challenge me. So I would say get surrounded quickly because it's bigger than you. This is how we grow quicker.
Ernie, what a really great app. Fauve, congratulations and an example of the ever-growing sharing economy. Ernie, final thoughts?
I think it's great. You know, you're promoting sharing is caring. And imagination truly is your only limitation here as to what you want. They're focusing on goods today, maybe services tomorrow. And, you know, I didn't ask one question, which I really wanted to ask, which was, what is the weirdest thing anybody asked for?
I got in my neighborhood like a cage for bats, but I live in a suburb next to Montreal. So I think that's like one of the weirdest things that I've seen, or sometimes people are asking things that I just don't know what it means. So yeah.
Fauve, thanks very much.
Thank you, Fauve.
Thank you.
A reminder, you can subscribe to Inspiring Entrepreneurs Montreal on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, or your favorite platform. And we'll see you back here next week. Thank you, Ernie.
My pleasure.
This has been a production of TNKR Media. Good talk.